Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, which is available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, or head on over to the website AmericaOutLoud.com and check out the articles and podcasts, and please share those on social media. So many great podcasts and articles up on AmericaOutLoud.com. Make sure you guys check that out. We're very excited because we got on Thomas Kenneth, who is running for New York City District Attorney tonight. We're going to be talking to him about New York City and what is going on in New York. A lot is going on in New York, in fact. We see the rise in the cost of living, rise of crime. They've got a new governor now after what has happened recently with Andrew Cuomo. We'll get his thoughts on the new governor and see if this is good news for the state of New York. So there's going to be a lot to talk about, and we're going to get to a lot of what is going on in New York City. But first off, After Dark with Rob and Andrew's New York resident, Rob Harper, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing just fine. I'm glad that our audience could join us tonight. And I, too, am excited to have Thomas Kenneth on with us. Before we opened the show, we wanted to find out if we should call him Tom or Thomas. And he said, well, whatever. And I said, well, no, actually not whatever. I want to call you by the name that's going to get you elected, because we need someone here in that seat that's going to support the laws and arrest people that are committing crimes and not turn New York City or pull New York City back from the brink of being turned to another LA or San Francisco. Now, Andrew, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but the guy, his opponent, I think his name is Alvin Braggs, he's planning on, so I think, and Thomas can correct us if I'm wrong, not to prosecute individuals that go in and steal from retail stores if the amount of what they're stealing is $250 or less. Now, in California, I think it's $900 or less. I don't care what the amount is. If you didn't pay for it, you're going to be charged. But this is how the minds of liberals work. And then the question becomes, why are you doing this? Well, Andrew, I think during the summer, the spring and summer of 2020, we were told that it's just stuff. Who cares about that? But someone has to pay for it. And either that cost is going to be passed down to the consumer with high prices, but it has to be paid for. But we were told, oh, don't worry about it. It's just stuff. Okay, it's just stuff. So why are we allowing people to do it? Well, because of the systematic racism and, you know, the unfair treatment. And stop right there. Because what you're saying now, in my opinion, is racist. Because what you're alluding to is that Black people, brown people, can't obey the law like everyone else, that they're challenged, that you have to make special rules for them, give them special privileges. Because as far as they're concerned, when the sign says you must pay for this, it means you can steal this. I don't think so. That's an insult. And anyone buying into that school of thought has rocks in their head and shouldn't even go anywhere near public office. But unfortunately, there are a lot of individuals that are running. Look at Cori Bush from Missouri, AOC plus three. You have all these people that are either running or have ran and have made it successfully to Congress, to higher office, serving as mayors, city council members. And they have this mindset that we have to give certain people special privileges, or, you know, take the brakes off just a little bit, because they just don't get it. Andrew, that's an insult. I get it. I'm Black. I get it. I pay my fair share of taxes. I understand the sign that says you must pay for this. My parents didn't raise me up that way. And a lot of these people that are stealing and doing this stuff, their parents didn't raise them up that way either. But we have the government that's telling them, oh, it's okay. How do we expect to correct the crime in any community if there isn't a penalty to pay when you break the law? Because in essence, what you're saying is, it's okay. You can do it. Don't worry about it. And then when it's time to pay the piper, when the police comes in and says, you're under arrest, or stop put that down. We want to continue, we being the perpetrator. Oh no, I don't have to listen to the police. I can do whatever I want to do. And if the police puts a bullet in me, I'm gonna say that that was racism. And if the police who's trying to protect other citizens does fire a gun and shoot because you didn't want to stop, what does family do? Oh, he was a good boy, he was a good girl. Now it's time to sue the city for millions of dollars. Really? That's how you want to get rich off of the death of a loved one? This just doesn't make any sense. How about obeying the law, live to see another day? If the police says stop, you stop. If the police was wrong, you file a complaint, and then everyone goes home. As opposed to, oh no, I can fight the police. Oh, I can do this to the police. The police has a gun. The police is to protect and to serve. He's going to protect the other citizens around you. But you want to fight the police? I'm sorry. A lot of these incidents that have taken place over the past couple of years, I shake my head. Because I say, you should have listened to the law. Eric Garner, all Eric Garner had to do was stop. That was it. He had done that before, selling cigarillos. George Floyd should not be dead. Let's just get it right. Okay, what happened to George Floyd is unfortunate. But at the same time, who out there didn't tell George Floyd that when the police says to stop, you must stop? When the police says to listen, you must listen. Derek Chauvin, let's just admit it, what he did was wrong. But equally wrong is us wanting to celebrate what happened to George Floyd. Putting up monuments, creating bills in honor of George Floyd. Is there a bill in honor of Rosa Parks or Martin Luther King? Now, we do know that every street in America that's named Martin Luther King Street or Martin Luther King Boulevard is one of the worst streets or boulevards that's out there. Shameful, 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 shameful. We can't forget history. We can't forget that it's the content of character that matters. Yes, racism exists. Let's just admit it. But we are a lot better off than we were, or we should be, than we were some 50 years ago. But slowly and surely, the Democrats are trying to turn back the time and take us back to those days. Look around you. Wake up. Look and see what's happening. We can't let it happen. We have to be governed by laws. People have to understand laws, and they must obey the law. No one is above the law. The law is what keeps a civil society together. So this whole thing, what New York is doing right now, Alvin Bragg's, and what he's proposing, and people are looking at it and saying, oh yeah, let's bring him in. Oh yeah, because it's going to be just a land of lawlessness. I don't think so. And we don't need it. Why should we? Simply because he's Black? Again, Black people can obey the law just like white people, red people, yellow people, green people, like anyone else. And to say otherwise is an insult. And we should all be shaking our heads. We don't want this kind of lawlessness to take over in our society. Because if it does, what will happen, Andrew? A decade from now, people will look back and wonder, why is there so much crime? How did we get here? What's happening? Well, I'll tell you why. The laws of the Democrats, the laws of the people that we put in power, that we entrusted our laws to, they decided it doesn't matter. And then when it did matter, when people try to correct it, it's like, well, I didn't know that was against the law. Well, of course you didn't know, because for so long, they said you could do it. So tonight, we have on our show, Thomas Kenneth. Mr. Kenneth is running to be the district attorney of New York City. He's coming on to tell you why he's running, and also to give us the basic fundamentals as to what that job entails, what it does, and what he will do. Thomas, how are you tonight?
Well, I'm great, guys. And look, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be on the show. And I love the lead in. Unfortunately, you stole half my talking points, but that's okay.
Well, hey, we're on the same page, and I like that.
I think we are.
So, Thomas, tell us, why now? Why are you deciding to run? From looking at your background, you were practicing at a major law firm, and now you're throwing your hat into the ring and you're saying, hey, I got to do something. I got to save this city. I got to save my city. Why now?
Well, I think you answered the question for me. I mean, that's truly what it is. I mean, look, I am not a political person. My 20 years or so in the legal field, frankly, you know, kind of made me want to stay away from politics as much as possible. I never aspired to be district attorney. I started my career as a young prosecutor in my 20s. I was an assistant district attorney. I kind of quote unquote checked that box. I served my country in Iraq in 2005 as a JAG. I came back. I did another stint as an assistant district attorney. And you know, I said, look, I kind of want to go into private practice and get away from at least full-time government work. I remained in the National Guard as a reservist. But I really had no pull towards this. I built a very successful criminal defense practice. I enjoy doing it. When it's going well, it compensates me reasonably. I have a great family. And, you know, who in their right mind would want to go in public life? You know, but when the opportunity sort of presented itself to me, any other point in time, I probably would have turned it down without thinking about it. But what motivated me to take this jump was just, you know, being so distraught over what I see happening to what I believe is the greatest city in the world. A city that, I'm old enough to remember what it was like when I was a kid in the late 70s and early 80s. I lived through the Renaissance. I came of age, if you will, in what I like to call the Sex and the City era. And what I mean by that was, you know, this period where New York City had, you know, just achieved these historically low crime rates. And, you know, as a young man moving into Manhattan after law school, you could enjoy the restaurants, the nightlife, the shows, go to a nightclub, come walk home at 3 a.m. and be reasonably confident that you'd be unmolested. To see that all wasted away based on what are really, you know, just myths of the progressive criminal justice reform era is heartbreaking. And they asked me to go to war once and I didn't run away from it. And I have an opportunity to step here and try to really save the city from, mayhem. I'm going to take it.
First of all, let me say thank you for your service. And I'm sure Andrew will join with me in saying thank you for your service, because there aren't many people. It takes a special kind of person to serve in the military. And we had a colonel on not too long ago, Colonel Julie Hall, and she was on our show twice. She was telling us the kind of people that they look for. So thank you, sir, for your service. We really do appreciate it. But just going back to what you were saying, as far as jumping in and, you know, wanting to save the city that you grew up in, I remember coming to New York and how at the time visiting, and I was fearful of it. I'm like, oh my God, you know, there are people all over and, you know, crime. And then when Giuliani came on board and said, I'm going to turn this around, and people laughed at him and said that it's impossible. You can't. New York City is ungovernable. Think back in the 70s when Ford turned his back on New York City. And then Rudy came in and said, no, it can be done. He came in like a bull and he was focused nonstop. He cleaned up the place. New York City, one of the largest cities in America, became one of the safest and the friendliest cities that people would come here. Times Square, Thomas, people would go to Times Square and take their families and walk around up to midnight, not fearful of anything, not having to worry about shootouts, prostitutes. Some people said, oh, it's become Disney-fied. I'm like, what's wrong with that? People loved going to Times Square. And now, if you walk out your front door, no matter where you are, you better be careful because you don't know if there's going to be a shootout. Every weekend, we're reading the stories of people being attacked, shootouts in the Bronx, in Brooklyn, even Manhattan. A guy was attacked with a machete at an ATM machine. People on the subways being attacked. And we have a mayor, de Blasio, who's about to leave office. 8 years of de Blasio. It took him 8 years to destroy everything that Rudy Giuliani and Mike Bloomberg helped to build. 8 years, with the last 2 years, 2020 and this year, being the most detrimental years for him to go in with this evil plan and just rip it all apart and then to blame it on COVID-19, when in actuality, it was his incompetence. He and a governor who's out of office now, who should be charged with the death, not of 15,000, but we're now hearing that it's possibly more than that. Add 12,000 more onto that. 27,000 plus people. Welcome to liberal land. And they say, oh, it's just fine living here. I don't think so. So Thomas, when you see this and you see that the person who wants to step in and govern, Alvin Bragg, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm horrified. And, you know, there's a couple of things that I would really encourage any listeners out there, you know, to keep in mind. Things, as bad as things are now, my opponent, Alvin Bragg, you know, he's not running on saying that, look, we'll just maintain the status quo. He wants to double down on this stuff. I mean, he not only supports the bail reform that went into effect on January 1st, 2020, and in its very first year led to a 97% increase in shootings and a 45% increase in murders. He doesn't want to stop there. He has pledged to end all cash bail. He wants to eliminate cash bail because it's racist, it's oppressive. His partner in crime, if you will, his Harvard buddy, Brian Benjamin, who co-authored the bail reform bill, who are now, you know, illustrious replacement governors, apparently tapped to be her lieutenant governor, has now co-authored a parole reform bill that I wrote an op-ed that was published in AM New York. And I basically defined it as what it is. It is the next lethal encore to bail reform, because if you read this bill with the, you know, sophistication of a lawyer who's been practicing criminal law, and you cut through the red tape, you see it for what it is. And essentially what it says, when you strip off all the bells and whistles, what it says is that anybody who comes up for parole is making parole. You know, there's legalese and nuances in it, but when you strip it down to its core, that's what the thing says. It creates a legal presumption in favor of parole that the parole board would have to rebut. So it takes parole from a privilege to a right. So what that means is if you have an individual who comes up for parole, even though they might have years left on their sentence, even though they may have committed numerous prison assaults wherever they are upstate, shank some people, join prison gangs and what have you, the parole board is going to be compelled to release them back out into the street. That's Alvin Bragg. That's our new lieutenant governor in New York State. So, you know, it would be bad enough if I was running against someone who just wanted to keep things as bad as they are. I'm running against someone who wants to double down on everything and make it, you know, infinitely worse, as if it could get any worse, or to the extent it can get any worse.
He sounds like George Gascon in California. Just,
oh yeah, or Larry Krasner in Philadelphia. I mean, look, this is, you know, the other thing that listeners should understand is this is not happenstance. You know, Alvin Bragg, you know, didn't just march into the Democratic primary and say, hey, look, let me take my shot at being DA. This is a playbook that has been played out throughout the country. 40% of our cities now are governed by progressive DAs. I'm not going to defend liberals, but it's unfair to liberals to just call it liberalism, because even, you know, I've talked to a lot of liberal Democrats in Manhattan that aren't for this. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I'm so convinced this race is winnable. this progressivism is something beyond just your traditional liberal Democrat. Their ideology is based on the premise that the American system, the American way of life, is racist and oppressive. And thus, anyone who happens to intersect with the criminal justice system, regardless of how egregious their crime, has gotten there as a result of being victims of oppression and racism themselves. Thus, it's unfair to punish them, or it's counterintuitive to punish them. So we have 40% of the cities, San Francisco, Philadelphia, Chicago, many others, under the control of the progressive DAs. Many of them are backed by George Soros or George Soros-like political action committees. And they descend on these DAs races, and they're very smart and very savvy at what they do. The reason they descend on the district attorney's races, as I think you've alluded to before, is that many people don't understand what a district attorney does, and they don't understand how powerful a position it is. The district attorney is the chief law enforcement officer in the jurisdiction, above the chief of the NYPD police. They basically are responsible for law and order. And what better way to undermine a system that someone believes is oppressive, racist, unjust, than to undermine law and order? Because that is the foundation of any functional society. No society in history has ever been able to continue without law and order. They don't believe the American society should continue, at least not in its current state, again, because they believe it's oppressive and racist. So they go after the district attorney's office. That's what's happening here. Alvin Bragg is not a coincidence. This is an orchestrated move.
And it's a scary and horrible orchestrated move. And I'm glad that you spelled out the job or the responsibility of a district attorney being the chief law enforcement officer, because people, they just don't know. They just assume he's going to enforce the law so that when a crime is committed, he's going to make certain that whoever committed that crime is going to have to pay a penalty. Now, something else about the DA, when we hear about these horrific crimes that are being committed, and from what we've seen in California and, you know, like I said, Philadelphia, the district attorneys, it seems as if though that they're clueless, and even in St. Louis. So do you guys go in, or are you interpreting the law? Are you upholding the law? How are these guys able to just look the other way when on the books it says that this is what has to happen?
Yeah, well, you know, look, no, I don't think they're incompetent. I mean, they're very deliberate. And again, it goes back to this is an orchestrated playbook that's been used throughout the country. Why is it so successful? Again, because people don't fully comprehend, or most people are may not comprehend at all what the district attorney's office does. So they're not paying attention to the race. Like right now in New York City, everything is the mayor's race. You hear very little about the district attorney's race. Thus, when one candidate, like my opponent Alvin Bragg, is pumped up with literally millions of dollars of PAC money, and all people hear is the name, you know, they'll go to the poll and say, all right, well, I know that guy's name. I don't know what the district attorney does anyway. So in those other cities, I mean, look, I wish it was just incompetence, but it is, you know, they are deliberately not upholding their oath of office and their job. Now, unfortunately, legally, prosecutors have, you know, absolute discretion. There is no mechanism by which anyone can, you know, bring a lawsuit or anything to get a prosecutor to prosecute crimes or to prosecute them a certain way. California has a recall, and I know I think they're on their second attempt, even in nutty San Francisco, because even the folks out there, as liberal as they may be, realize, you know, how awful their progressive district attorney has been for San Francisco. You know, in New York, we don't have a recall. So, you know, they can basically, once a progressive district attorney like my opponent Alvin Bragg takes office, you know, he's they're steering the ship, and there's really no recourse other than waiting till the next election potentially to do something.
How did we get here, I wonder? How did people like lose sight as to what our laws are designed to do, that they're so willing to allow big money like George Soros or the likes of him to come in and change things? I mean, you would think that people would look at New York City and say, wait a minute, 8 years ago, things were so peaceful and quiet. I felt protected. And now every time I turn on my TV or turn around, there are violent crimes, not just petty crimes, but violent crimes that are being committed in broad daylight. And you look at New York City as predominantly Democrat liberals, but as you said, Thomas, there are liberals that are now looking at this and they're saying, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for this, but I wonder if there's enough of them that will stand up and go to the polls and press down that lever and say, this is a person that we want. But then you have to think about, as you said, big money that's being pumped into the races for Alvin Bragg. A lot of people don't know what he's going to do, but they see his picture out there all the time. So he must be the person. Who else is out there? People, you've got to open up your wallets, okay? You got to open up your wallets because these candidates that are law-abiding citizens that are playing it by the book, accepting the minimum donations, cannot compete against people with deep pockets like the George Soros's of the world. Though someone would say, well, why are you guys always bringing up George Soros? Because George Soros is always in the mix. He's always there with his checkbook open. The guy's in his 90s. Unfortunately, or fortunately, he'll be dead soon. But then the damage has been done. And we have all these crazy policies and we have people that are looking the other way. And something that you must realize is that while you're in the midst of it, of the shootouts, afraid to go outside, the likes of George Soros, and then the people like Bragg, oh, they'll go to the Hamptons, or they'll go to Jersey, or they'll go someplace else to their vacation houses, while you're having to hunker down here in the city, afraid for your life. It has to change. It can't always be this way. And that is a reason why we brought on Thomas, so that he could talk directly to the voters and let you guys know this is what he stands for, law and order. We are a law and order society. Without laws, things are completely chaotic. And Andrew, I don't think people can survive in chaos.
Yeah, certainly not. Some things need to change in New York City, and hopefully people get out and vote for Thomas Kenneth, who is running for New York City District Attorney. And you are listening to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, which is available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and about 15 other platforms. So go to AmericaOutLoud.com and check out all the platforms we are on. We will be back with more on After Dark with Rob and Andrew.
Well, my fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down? You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits are supporting these extremists. Companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx, it's an endless list. And they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cells pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutloud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
And we're back with After Dark with Rob and Andrew. And we're here with our guest, Thomas Kenneth. And he's running for district attorney in New York City. And before we went to break, he was letting the listeners know that you need to know and understand the responsibilities of a district attorney, because if you don't, when things start to fall apart, you start wondering, well, who's gonna look at this and who's gonna make certain that this person pays for the crime that he's committed? And when you go in to vote and you see the names are there, those names are there for a reason. You just don't go eeny, meeny, mighty, mo, because eeny, meeny, mighty, mo could get you killed. Eeny, meeny, mighty, mo could cause more crime to take place. So we want to devote the first couple of minutes to the second half of the show with Thomas talking directly to you, the listeners, the voters, and explaining to you what's at risk and why you should take this election seriously and vote for him. And as I said, he didn't say it, but I'm saying it. Open up your pockets and be generous. They can't survive if we don't support them. And when you're going up against big money machines, hey, you can get crushed, but there's always hope. And as he said, liberals are now waking up and realizing that this is not what we signed up for. And I hope others wake up also. So Thomas, tell us, when you're elected, what will you do for New York City?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Rob. I mean, the first thing we have to do is we have to repeal or substantially reform the bail reform. There is no way, it is not possible that we will ever be able to get control of New York City or get control of crime in New York City with the current bail law. You just can't do it. You cannot have the police locking up the same guy 4, 5, 6 times a month and judges having to let them turn him loose and put him back on the street. And I'm not, you know, when I say these things, I haven't read them in some Newsweek article. I haven't heard about it. I see this. I live this. I've been practicing criminal law here for my entire career. So I see it with my own eyes. And honestly, I'm a criminal defense attorney and I'm proud of that. I've seen it with indigent clients that I've agreed to represent as part of the indigent panel here in the city. I have clients that I can't get rid of because they keep getting rearrested and getting put back out and being rearrested again. I defend them zealously because I'm running for prosecutor, but I believe that everyone is entitled to due process and a zealous defense. That's the way the founding fathers intended it. It's an adversarial system. But there is no way we can get this city back with that bail law. Now people say, well, you're running for district attorney, you're not a legislature, you can't change the bail law. Indeed, I can't. However, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office is one of the most powerful, if not arguably the most powerful district attorney's office or prosecutor's office in the country. And if I am elected as a Republican in a traditionally very Democratic jurisdiction, I'll have one hell of a bully pulpit. And I think that'll be one big wake-up call to the legislatures that voted in this law, who are already facing tremendous pressure in more moderate jurisdictions, or even here in the city, to, you know, go up to Albany and say, change this law, and that's what I'll do. We have to do that. Secondly, we have to re-empower NYPD. Okay, we hear a lot from, you know, the Eric Adams of the world, these faux moderates that say that now they're coming around to see what a difference law and order makes after having, you know, spent so many years tearing down the police and law and order. And the one thing you hear about them, the one thing you hear from the Biden administration is more cops, more cops, more cops. I'm all for more police, but more police doing what? You have to allow them to police. I'd rather have one police officer who's allowed to do their job than 10 that can't. We're never going to be able, no matter how many police we hire, we're never going to have a police officer on every street corner or on every subway car, nor should we want to. Nobody wants to live in a police state, right? That used to be what liberals would rail against. So we have to empower the police to do their job again. One of the big things that has led to the burgeoning crime here in New York City, in addition to bail reform, has been the decision last summer to disband the anti-crime unit, the plainclothes unit. What was anti-crime's primary tasks? One was guns, which, by the way, we've obviously seen a huge increase in shootings and illegal gun possession, and crimes on the subway, something else that went up dramatically as soon as they made the decision to abandon the anti-crime unit. My opponent, Alvin Bragg, says he opposes plainclothes policing because it's a civil rights issue. Okay, that sort of upside down thinking needs to go out the window. As district attorney, I'm going to not only support our NYPD, but I'm going to support anti-crime policies and plainclothes policing. So those are two of the main things. Third, the current district attorney, Cy Vance, has turned a blind eye to many of what otherwise would be called quality of life offenses. We talked, it was mentioned earlier about the petty larcenies. You know, you go into a Duane Reade or a CVS now, which are on almost every corner here in Manhattan, everything is locked up, you know, and I engage with the employees there, who, by the way, are disproportionately Black and brown individuals. Okay, so they rely on these retail establishments to be doing well for employment, okay, and they're great mechanisms for advancing the cause of those that maybe come from underserved communities, because they bring retail to underserved communities and they bring jobs. Well, we're killing those businesses now because they have to lock all their products up. So I talk to the employees who work there and say, hey, look, what's going on? You know, I came here to get toothpaste and hair gel, but I'm only going to get toothpaste because I can't wait for someone to come on the other aisle and unlock their gel cabinet. And they said, yeah, you know, look, it's killing us, because a lot of customers get frustrated and just walk out. Sales are down. We got to hire more employees just to, you know, unlock things. So that, you know, cuts down the bottom line. And it's just having a awful effect on, you know, retail in the city. And we have to get retail back. I mean, we've had businesses throughout the COVID pandemic flee. You drive down Soho, south of Houston. My office is just south of Canal Street. And two out of every three stores is boarded up. So, you know, these are the things we have to do to take back our city. You know, there's other parts of my platform. I have a lot to say about mental health after watching, you know, criminal justice system being so inept at dealing with mental health issues and representing a lot of people who have mental health issues, and seeing what a change can be made if they're dealt with correctly. But instead we have catch and release, where someone comes into before an arraignment judge, you know, they're babbling incoherently to themselves. They're obviously under the influence of a severe psychiatric condition, and they're just released and put back out on the street.
Yeah, well said, Thomas. Let's get to some hot topics here and some news that we will cover for the remainder of the show and get your guys' thoughts on those. First off, New York Governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, vows to launch New York's legal marijuana industry that Governor Cuomo stalled on. I think this is a little foreshadowing that this is at the top of her priority list so soon in her reign as governor. But what are your thoughts, Rob?
No, I know that this is not the most popular thing to say. I don't like it. I've read the reports. I know some people will say, oh, well, it's innocent. Is this, is that? I just don't like the stench, okay? I hate walking outside my apartment. I live in the financial district, and I turn the corner, and then someone has lit up, and I've got to smell that odious smell. I'm like, please, come on. And what I don't get is that we spent so much time trying to keep people from smoking, because it's bad for your lungs, it's bad for this, secondhand smoke, it's bad for the atmosphere. Why now are we okay with pot, people smoking pot? I just don't get it. I know there's a lot of money to be made on it. And people were saying way back when that as soon as the government figures out how they can tax it and make their money, that's when they're going to make it legal. I just don't get it. Because if you're telling me, please don't smoke, well, what are you doing with the with pot? I remember at one point, everyone started vaping. They said, oh, stop smoking and go to vaping. Now it's, oh, don't go to vaping. It can kill me. It can harm you also. I'm completely against it. Thomas, what do you think? You might say that it's okay, but I'm against it. What do you think, Thomas?
You know, look, I think my feelings on it are a little more nuanced. You know, I've never been a fan of marijuana. Honestly, even as a teen in my 20s, you know, I'd go to a bar, I'd like to have a few drinks, sometimes more than a few back in the day. Anyway, and I was just never a marijuana guy. And I've seen, I saw a lot of people, I went to a suburban high school and it seems to be a big thing in the suburbs. And yeah, I saw a lot of people that kind of started in junior high, and, it didn't necessarily destroy everyone's life. But a lot of people that really didn't achieve their potential in life, or it led to, it graduated to other drugs, harder drugs, it became a gateway drug.
Right. Look, and that's my fear.
Right. That being said, look, we allow people to drink alcohol, right? I will say that the social consequences of alcohol are, in my opinion, are worse than marijuana, in terms of, the crazy things it makes people do, from drunk driving, domestic violence incidents to, prolonged health problems and so forth. I mean, certainly as bad as marijuana, and I think in many cases worse. So, if we allow people to drink, then what's the rationale for saying we're not going to allow people to smoke marijuana? Now, what I will say, though, however, and this was, this was brought up, the notion that you can smoke weed anywhere you want, whenever you want, on any street in New York City, blowing secondhand smoke in the faces of children and so forth, that I disagree with. You can't smoke a cigarette. And I've never been a cigarette smoker either, but I kind of empathize with them a little bit, because, if you want to smoke a cigarette, you got to go 1,000 feet from anything and,
right.
put a plastic bag over your head and, only exhale into your,
plastic your bag.
Right. Meanwhile, you can smoke marijuana with impunity, and that I disagree with. So it's a democracy. If the majority of people think that the substance should be legal, I'm not someone who's going to get in the way with that. But I think, the time, place, and manner of use should be regulated. And if I'm elected district attorney, I would prosecute, what we would call criminal possession of marijuana in the fifth degree, burning, and in open and public view. If you're gonna use the stuff, use it in the privacy of your own home. Use it in a way that isn't, subjecting other people to the smell, the smoke. Parents shouldn't have to explain to kids at 5, 6, 7 years old, well, what's that funny smell, Dad or Mom? So that's where I come down on it. And obviously, other things like, you can't drive a car, operate machinery while you're smoking a fatty, right?
Yeah, well said. And it's so backwards in a city like San Francisco. When I spent some time there, like Thomas was saying, that someone that would light up a cigarette on the side of the street, they'll be getting dirty looks and people will be just gawking at them. But someone will light up marijuana and people just walk by like it's completely normal, no big deal. It's quite interesting, the double standard on that.
Now. And if I could say this also, Andrew, before you go to the next topic, what I always found interesting, I'm not a smoker, but I always... whenever you would see a smoker and someone didn't have a cigarette and they would walk up to the person and say, do you have a cigarette? Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. And they would give it to them as if they were to say, yeah, let's smoke this thing. Let's smoke it all the way, because they want to stop us, but we got the brother and sisterhood. So let's smoke. I was always amazed at how smokers identified with other smokers, and they were always in agreement when they would be outside and below zero weather smoking. I mean, and they're just like yakking it up. I'm like, wow, that's like a perfect stranger could walk up and say, yo, man, you got one? Oh, yeah, here it is. Can I take the one you're about to finish? Oh, yeah, let me get a couple of smokes off that. It's never ceased to amaze me. So I guess we'll see the same thing with people out there with their marijuana.
New York City has passed San Francisco as the most expensive United States city to rent an apartment in. It is the biggest city in our country, and apparently it is the most expensive. Thomas, what is happening in New York City where the costs are so high?
I don't know. And I'm not, I'm not an economist, and rents aren't, part within the DA's a wheelhouse, but I don't understand it, because I know firsthand so many people who have fled the city during the COVID pandemic. I mean, I bumped into a couple that lived on the Upper West Side today at a place I have lunch at, and you know, they just left or are leaving. They said, you know, and they're like clique of friends, there were seven families and there's like one left. You know, we sure as hell haven't had many people moving here. You know, in the last year and a half anywhere. So I don't really know what's driving the rents. I mean, look, you know, I want to stay in my wheelhouse on talking about law and order and crime. But, you know, one of the things that I do point out to people is, look, you know, we're in this suspended animation right now. You know, for the last year and a half, and it keeps being extended, landlords haven't been able to evict tenants. And there are a lot of tenants who haven't paid a dime in rent since the start of the shutdown. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, banks haven't been able to foreclose on the landlords, you know, so everyone's kind of, you know, doped up with this, you know, government money or moratoriums, and everything's sort of in suspended animation. You know, because of that, the apartments that are on the market or coming on the market, maybe there's an artificially inflated demand. I don't know. But one of the points that I bring up to people when I say it's so important that, you know, if we're going to win back residents, those that have left and attract new ones, we need to at least be able to, we'll never be able to compete with, you know, Charlotte, Raleigh, Miami on the weather. But we have the Big Apple here, which as I said earlier, I think is the greatest city in the world. But we need to at least reasonably be able to assure people, you know, safe passage on our streets, our subways, a reasonably safe environment. Because once the veil is lifted off the eviction moratorium, foreclosure, you know, you're going to have a flood of evictions, which is then going to lead to a flood of inventory on the market. And, you know, I find it very hard to believe that we're going to, you know, have a situation where demand is exceeding supply for the inventory of our housing, unless we can bring New York City back to what it's been for the last few decades before this liberal and, you know, progressive insanity has taken root.
Yeah, well said. Rob, you rent an apartment in New York City. What has it been like since you moved there? Has the cost kept going up like we see on the news? I mean, we constantly hear about people fleeing to Florida and Texas, getting out of New York, getting out of Illinois, California, all these liberal states where the taxes are just outrageous and the rent is sky high. What's it been like since you moved to New York?
Well, I will say this. It is interesting that report came out and they said that it's New York rent is like it's increased by like $10 or so. I live in the financial district, so yes, the rent is high. I look at when I moved here, what the city was and what it is now. I'm a bit disappointed because of de Blasio, who has just basically ruined, it seems as though, every neighborhood for whatever reason. We had on our show the other day, Jackie Toberoff, and she was saying that de Blasio had said that he wanted to make certain that certain neighborhoods in New York City weren't rich and they weren't white. Now, to me, that in itself is racist. That being said, going back to the rent, there was a candidate, I think about a decade ago, who said that the rent is too damn high. I can agree with that. I also look at the fact that you said people are moving or leaving New York City for the suburbs, for Florida. I hope those people don't take their liberal ideology to Florida and to Texas. Leave it where you got it from. Don't go there and mess it up. That being said, I think that eventually things will turn back. People will start coming back to the city. Jobs, you'll have more jobs. Hopefully that will be an even playing field so that people will be able to pay their rent. Hopefully we will be able to get Thomas Kenneth in office so that he could restore law and order. And the people that are afraid that are leaving the city, citing lawlessness, homelessness, will eventually come back.
Yeah, well said, Rob. And we've got a few minutes left with Thomas. Something else that I wanted to ask him about was the mayor race in New York City. I mean, he is running for district attorney. We've got Eric Adams and Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels running. What are your thoughts, Thomas? Do you think we're going to be better off either way once we get de Blasio out of here, or is it Curtis Sliwa or bust?
In fairness to Eric Adams, I think it's hard to imagine anything worse than what we've had for the last 8 years. I think Adams would be an improvement. But I'm skeptical of him. I know he started, and look, I've said it multiple times already. To me, it's law and order, law and order, law and order. That's the issue in my race. I am pleased that Adams moved towards what, could probably be categorized as a, moderate, if not, pro law enforcement stance. And I think that is the reason why he won, which underscores why I think even Democrats in New York City are not on board with any of this insanity that my opponent is selling. I question the sincerity of it, but I'd rather at least have it him be talking the talk than not. But at the same time, from a law and order standpoint, I certainly would prefer Curtis Sliwa. And you could say what you want about Curtis, but look, there's probably no one who knows New York City better than him. There's no one that has really put himself, literally physically on the front lines of trying to defend the city at a time when it was considered ungovernable. His passion for the city is there. His knowledge of it is there. I don't think, some people, he certainly is somewhat of a showman, but I don't think that he's, doing this for show. I mean, he's already built enough of a household name reputation, at least within New York City, that I don't think he needs to run for mayor to capitalize on any of that. So I wouldn't count him out. A lot of people say, it's never going to happen. But look, he speaks to a lot of people, certainly, Staten Island's Republican, so he's going to pull that. But even in the boroughs, a lot of people kind of identify with him and his sort of, hard scrabble New York identity. And Manhattan voted against Adams, but Manhattan went for Yang. So I don't know they're going to come out for Sliwa, but they may just stay home and say, to hell with it. And the old adage being, look, a week is a lifetime in politics, right? So with hatchet attacks, and the hatchet attack, it was last week. This week it was followed up with a hammer attack. Yeah, I call that progressive poker. I'll see your hatchet attack and raise you one hammer. No one knows what's going to happen over the next 2.5 months, and the Curtis Sliwa, mayoral shit may not be that far out. So that's the way I see it.
Yeah, that would sure be nice. Rob, as you know, we had Fernando Mateo on the show. We were a big fan of his. We've never disparaged or said anything negative about Curtis Sliwa, but we've kind of went back and forth on him. Has he come around on you at all yet?
He's come around from the standpoint that I don't care for Eric Adams. I think that Eric Adams is part of the whole swamp. I think that because the media has anointed him and they're making it seem as if though he is the mayor, because New York is a Democrat city. You look at Joe Biden, he invited him to the White House. It's like, well, why did you invite Curtis Sliwa? Eric hasn't won the race yet. Forget about who else is running. He's going to get this. But what if he doesn't get it? I'll tell you what's going to happen. If he doesn't get it, they will all be out with their lawyers wanting to recount the vote. Now, if this were to happen to a conservative, it's like, shut up, go away. You don't know what you're talking about. But for Democrats, we can recount the vote. I don't think so. We need someone with a strong and steady hand at the top. Curtis, we've invited him to come on the show. I will vote for him over Adams because I think Adams is just there for show. I think that they will be able to manipulate Adams. And, Adams had said that he would still consider the advice of de Blasio. I don't know why he said it. No one likes de Blasio. I mean, what liberals are out there that like this guy? Considering he has destroyed single-handedly with Shirlene, decimated New York City. And we still want him on the stage. Of course, he probably has eyes of running for governor, and there will be people that will vote for him. I mean, the guy thought he could run for president. That's New York politics. Go figure. But again, we need someone who's steady at the top. We need someone who can go the distance. We need someone who's going to be about law and order. I think that Thomas Kenneth is about law and order, and we should definitely focus our attention on him.
Thomas, thank you so much for joining us tonight. As Rob mentioned, you are for Law and Order. You are a military veteran. You've been around New York City forever. You know what it's like. If people like what they heard tonight, what's the best way that they could support you and keep up with what you are doing?
Oh, geez. Yeah. I mean, you know, if people want to go visit my website, it's Kniff, the number 4DA.com. So K-E-N-N-I-F-F as in Foxtrot, Foxtrot, as we say in the military, the number 4DA.com. You know, look, everybody hates money in politics, myself included. It's the worst thing in the world I've ever had to do is ask people for money. And there's many other ways to support me. Tell your friends, get on social media, tweet, retweet, like, scream from the rooftops. But if you do have something to contribute financially to this campaign, again, I hate money in politics, but as the old adage goes, I'd love to see you live without it. And the reality is that, you know, the Democratic machine, the George Soros PAC money and everything else that's being pumped in my opponent's race, it's very hard to compete with. I am convinced that the voters in this race are not the problem. I talk to them all over Manhattan. Republican, Democrat, liberal Democrats, they don't want this. Two out of three of the Democrats who showed up, only 25% turnout in the Democratic primary, by the way, and two out of three of them voted against Alvin Bragg. This is a winnable race if people know I'm out here. And, you know, I got to get over the hump of getting the resources that's necessary to get to them. So if you like what I'm saying, if you don't like what I'm saying, obviously you're not going to vote for me, you're not going to contribute, you're not going to do anything. But if you agree with what I'm saying and you think that you know, this is the way to prevent New York City from descending into oblivion, please, anything that you might be inclined to do, it's all going directly towards getting the message out.
Yeah, well said. And Rob and I always say that go directly to the candidate's website and donate directly to the candidates, not to the GOP. When you donate directly to the candidates, you know where your money is going and it goes into the race instead of a situation where you don't know what the money is being spent on. Thank you so much to our guest tonight, Thomas Kniff, who is running for New York City District Attorney. If you guys are looking for better sleep, focus, and energy, you can check out Healthy Cell, the leading innovator of nutritional supplements for cell health. Healthy Cell vitamins work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Rob and I have been taking Immune Super Boost, and we are so glad we did because we have felt great since we started taking Healthy Cell. Absorb a healthier lifestyle with Healthy Cell's pill-free vitamins. Comes in a great, tasty gel pack. And you could go and use the code OUTLOUD and save 20% on HealthyCell.com. Thank you all for joining us tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud. Check us out on the revamped website over at AmericaOutLoud.com. You can find us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, and a whole lot more. We'll see you guys next time. And remember, stand for something or you will fall for nothing.